We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 162. Today on the podcast, we've got a little bit of a different setup for you. Scott will not be joining me on the podcast because he's going to be a new dad. He is having the baby today. He texted me Wednesday afternoon, just as the Yankees were heading into that rain delay, saying, guess what? My wife is going into labor. I'm not going to be able to do the podcast tonight. Obviously, I was super angry with him and said, how could this be? But I had to go out and find a new co-host, and that's what I did. So first part of this podcast, I'm going to be talking to Barstool JJ. He's been on the podcast before. You guys have heard him. We did about 25 minutes with him. And then in the second half, we do a stats breakdown with the podcast intern, Dom Musilio, who you guys have been following on Twitter as he tweets out a bunch of awesome stats. Scott, I know, has a million things going on right now, so it's totally understandable that he was not able to do the podcast today. And he probably didn't care that the Yankees were in a rain delay and losing to the woeful Detroit Tigers, but the rest of us do. So that's what we're going to get into today with the podcast, and Scott will be back on Monday's episode as a proud new papa. Before we get into the actual podcast, though, I just want to take a minute to remind everybody, please rate and review the podcast in iTunes. It really helps us out. As we've been saying, we're way over 300 reviews at this point. It's awesome to see. We appreciate everybody who listens. And the way you can show that you're listening is go give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It will help us get new listeners. It will help us get better guests and the whole nine yards. So again, go rate us in iTunes and enjoy this episode of the podcast. Joining me on the podcast now is Barstool JJ. You've heard him on the podcast a number of times. JJ, what's up?
Not too much. Have you guys ever had a live walk-off?
No, and this is a perfect time to have that. Obviously, the 45-hour rain delay. A lot of rain delay hot takes out there today. But yeah, we're watching in the bottom of the eighth with Didi at bat right now during this podcast.
Yeah, no, I think it would be fitting that since the last time I was on, Scott was in like Asia eating weird food, like food that was still moving, and he survived that. That today he would miss the first ever live walk-off on the podcast.
I can't believe he could not put his baby on hold for the podcast.
Put a cork in it, Scott. Come on.
Well, I think the baby just wanted to get out there because it heard that the Yankees traded for Sonny Gray and needed to see its first start tomorrow.
Very excited for that.
Yeah. What Scott and I already gave our opinions on the whole Gray trade. We loved it. What are you thinking?
I think it was a great job. So I said, about 2.5 years ago, I wrote a bunch of stuff, and I think I've even said it at times on here, when the Yankees re-signed Girardi and Cashman, like, no one wanted that job because, like, who wants to take over that shitty team? You know, you've got overpaid salaries, and so essentially Cashman had 3 years to, like, sort this out, and he really has. We gave up Dustin Fowler, who's had a good minor league career, but wasn't like a can't miss, oh my God, we've got to have him. He wasn't a Gary Sanchez hype or a Gleyber Torres. So losing him while he's got a blown out knee, and I think he's still going to come back and have a career, and he'll actually probably get to start next year in the majors rather than re-earn it in the minors next year. He's pretty blocked in New York, so that's great. Kaeberlin, like, we're, you know, dealing with a guy who's been really injured, and who knows if he's ever going to find his place. So there's huge upside, but right now, not a ton of value. And Mateo was not only blocked, but he had attitude problems. So I think to give them up to get a guy who's young, controllable for, you know, 2.5 years, and who's been pitching well. Now, obviously, when you get to New York, who knows what it's going to be. But I think it was a smart trade for right now because you can't be in first place, which we were at the time, and just say, well, we're not going to make a move here. We're not going to try to fix our biggest problem.
The I think all fans are on the same page. As long as Clint Frazier and Gleyber Torres stay in pinstripes, we don't care. We don't want to give up all the rest of our prospects. But Cashman didn't do that, and we knew Cashman wasn't going to do that. He made a smart trade. He's been a ninja with trading. He still has problems signing free agents, namely guys like Jacoby Ellsbury. But for a guy like Billy Beane, who's supposedly the best GM out there, I feel like Cashman has gotten the better of him and a number of different GMs around the league.
I mean, I think for Billy Beane, this deal makes sense because he's a big, like, you know, upside guy. Like, his whole thing has been finding guys with, like, tremendous upside and having them realize it because he saw some weird thing or Jonah Hill whispered something in his ear that we didn't see. So, you know, I think it still is, like, a good trade for them, mostly because they weren't going to get what they wanted. You know, they wanted a Clint Frazier, Gleyber Torres out of us. Who knows what else they were asked for out of other teams. And when it came down to it, you know, they said, we want to make this move on Gray now rather than risk like something happening. And it's at its highest and this is what we can get. And let's take the upside. And if two of those three guys end up contributing in the major leagues in some form or fashion, it's a good trade for them.
I was thinking about this trade today, and Sonny Gray, while he's probably not an ace, he is the biggest midseason acquisition the Yankees have had as far as pitchers go since 95 when they traded for David Cone.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's not
going to
come in. Yeah, he's not going to come in and be that, you know, what David Price did for Toronto recently or, you know, what we saw in the past, like Randy Johnson do for Houston. But in 2 years or so, like he could be a great number two, like a 1-2 combo with like us going out and getting a frontline ace.
And with what Severino's done this year, plus you got Montgomery, who looks like he can at least be a serviceable major league pitcher, that's a three young guys that are controlled. So Cashman's done a lot of work in just a year's time because we had you on this podcast right after the season ended. Yankees were in full rebuild mode. It took them 12 months. And now,
dude, I love rebuilding. Rebuilding's so much fun. I get why everyone is a Mets fan. I'd sign up for rebuilding all the time. This is a blast.
Yeah, I think the Royals were in rebuild mode for like 26 years, but it took the Yankees 12 months. And while they're not the favorites, I think they do have a legitimate World Series shot this year.
Yeah, because so one thing today I've been kind of like battling people online. Like people want Holiday gone. And I can get sitting him, but like who do you put in that place? He's been too good for too long to like just quit on him now. Like he could turn it around, but he's close to the end of that rope. And people are like, oh, you got to bring up Aguilar. You got to, you know, you got to make all these moves. Just bring him up. And I think what the Yankees did last year to get back in the race and what they've done at times this year is because it's not a complete team yet. They get these like bursts of you call a guy up, like they just called up Clint. Clint has contributed. Now, that slows down at a certain point. Judge did the same thing last year with Sanchez. So now if you wait and you can stay, you know, a half game up in first, a half game down, right in there, and then if things don't turn around for a Holiday or someone gets injured, you have that shot in the arm to bring up that's been playing every day rather than just rotating days off for guys and, you know, he's sitting 3 of 7 days.
Holiday is in a huge slump right now, and yeah. I think he's having an effect on Judge in the sense that he was protecting Judge for the entire first half. Holiday was the veteran hitter behind Judge that teams had to respect. And right now, especially with Starlin Castro also on the DL, Gary Sanchez has never really, he had like a couple week bursts where he was the Gary Sanchez from August of last year. But he's been solid, but he hasn't been like the megastar that he was at any point this year. And now we're seeing Judge getting pitched differently. I hate people that say the home run derby ruined him because I think that's horse shit. But the reality is he's swinging at pitches in the dirt like he was at the end of last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the book's out on him a bit more. And he doesn't have – this whole second half, he hasn't had really any protection. So he's struggling too. And you can't just blame everyone else for why he's struggling. But they're throwing, you know, better pitches to him because it's clear – that he'll swing over the top of it. And who knows? Maybe he gets some protection. You know, Starlin Castro is going to come back to be a cleanup batting second baseman for us. And, you know, maybe that's the spark. Or maybe he ends up, you know, one day you turn on the game And as Michael Kay's talking before the game, he says, oh, and you see, here's some video of Aaron Judge out there early on the field, or he's been in the cages early making an adjustment. And then he turns it around. He's still a young guy. There's going to be those holes in his swing and his game. So, you know, you just got to figure, you know, he's made it this far with the right coaching and with someone behind him. And, you know, Cashel getting back in the lineup could be that guy. It could turn things around for him.
I know everyone says he's the most down-to-earth guy and he takes everything one stride at a time, all the cliches you want to hear about. But he became the biggest star in baseball in a matter of 3 months. That has to mess with your head. It would mess with anybody's head. Now, I don't think that's the only reason he's slumping, but I feel like after the All-Star break, he was so popular. He got the judges chambers, all that crap. I just feel like eventually that does catch up to a kid like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to. He's the biggest baseball player in the biggest city in the world.
Yeah, and he stole the All-Star game. He stole All-Star week from Giancarlo Stanton in Miami.
Yeah, and not only that, but like that's the dead time of sports. He was the biggest athlete that was active at that time. You know, yeah, you're getting some NBA offseason stuff, but every night leading off SportsCenter, what did Aaron Judge do?
And it's not even SportsCenter. I mean, you had non-sports outlets covering Aaron Judge that week. So
yeah, I mean, it was like sweeping the nation. Now, like grandmas love him. Like it's the kind of thing where like when you casually call home to talk to your mom and you would never talk about baseball, she'll be like, "That Aaron Judge guy." Like that's what he reached. My mom knows who he is.
Right. Once you reach mom status, then you know you've made it.
Yeah.
How are you worried at all about him?
I mean, long term, like for a career, I don't see how, you know, he's had knee problems in the past. I don't see how a body that big holds up. You know, it's like, you know, when you have a guy who's huge at any level, you know, Yao Ming in basketball, Andre the Giant in wrestling, like these guys, physically, that's just a lot more size to carry. And to be out there running around all the time, running into walls. I could see him going through a position change to extend his career. In the short term, I'm not worried. But I also don't, you know, I think realistically, I've always said he's, you know, not going to end up being the next A-Rod or, like, greatest player of all time because I think his body will give up on him at some point. But, I mean, he's still, if the season ended right now, he'd still be the MVP and Rookie of the Year. So you just, you know, hope he can, you know, find something. And I think young guys like him have to reinvent themselves at some point during their first season. I think we've seen at this point, Gary Sanchez is basically having like he's basically played a full year now and people caught up to him. He had to, you know, kind of reinvent himself a little bit to get on the board. He's figuring it out as time goes on and Judge is in that same thing. And I just realized how long-winded that was.
It's just, yeah, I mean, the slump is so exaggerated. That's the thing. It's just, it's going on pretty much since the second half. He's had a couple of spots where I thought he was getting out of it, like when he almost hit it out of Safeco Field, and he's had a couple of games where he's looked good, but then he reverts, and his average is down to around 300 now. The reality was, he's not a 330 hitter, so it was going to come down. And because there's a lot of fans that came back to the Yankees, I think during this last few months, and they just thought Aaron Judge was God. That I mean, some people are just, you know, you've got your hot take police out there. The Yankees' offense, though, is kind of been up and down. It's like Monday they can go out and they can hit Fulmer, who was Rookie of the Year last year, and then they go and struggle Tuesday and today and barely can touch Sanchez and Zimmerman, and both those guys have ERAs over 5. So it's one of those things where the inconsistency is becoming an issue, I think, with this team. That they're missing their guys. They're missing Castro and Aaron Hicks at this point.
Yeah, I think with like Zimmerman is, I forget what number, but they've just totally struggled against guys that they really don't see. And with Zimmerman spending so much of his time in the NL, guys that they haven't seen a lot, they've really struggled with this year. And I know today was like Zimmerman's first game ever in Yankee Stadium. So it goes in waves, and you just kind of hope they keep it close enough that like when they hit the wave at the right time, we're headed into the postseason and through the postseason. But yeah, without those two guys out, you know, without those two guys out there playing, and much more Castro than Hicks at this point, it just throws off the rhythm. You know, it throws off like the energy of, you know, even if they're in the dugout, it's not the same as like seeing Castro on base, you know, seeing him score and letting that, like, you know, feed you up, because he's a high energy guy.
We all love our Ronald Torres and our Tyler Wade's, but the reality is they're just not Starlin Castro.
Yeah, like, I, at the beginning of the season, was a huge Torres guy. Just because, like, he hit a home run, it was funny, this is great, he gets lifted up for a high five. But, like, I like him getting lifted up for a high five, not up with the game on the line.
Although, he does have a couple of hits in big spots this year. He'll even throw his bat at the ball to stay alive.
Yeah.
But he's one of those, yeah, and I think the first couple weeks there was just so many pictures of him and Judge. It got a little annoying.
Yeah. You know, he's sneaky, like, not a lot of people realize that. He sneaky went wire to wire in the majors last year. He didn't get sent down once.
He's everyone expects him. First of all, he kind of looks older as far as his face goes, but I think he's only like 23 or 24 years old. Everyone expects him to just stink because he's tiny, but he sticks around. I mean, he can play multiple positions. He's a guy that Girardi, I know, loves.
I've never looked up, like, what his story is. Like, you know how you hear about how Jose Altuve, like, got cut and then showed up again? I've never looked up Torres's because I want to imagine that it was something like Altuve's, because he's just such a little guy. Like, he showed up and no one wanted him, or, like, he was just, like, hitting rocks with a stick somewhere and now he's playing for the Yankees. But it'll probably just be like, oh no, he grew up in like Southern California, went to a normal high school, just kind of like stuck through the minors, and here he is.
Yeah, maybe that's why we haven't heard the Torreya story, or it's because he's a bench player and he's not hitting 500 in the month of July like Altuve was.
This is true.
I saw something interesting. The Monday game versus Detroit was the highest rated game the YES Network has had in 3 years. The whole Sonny Gray trade, that what Cashman did over the last few weeks to put this team back into contention, has everyone pumped up. And you'd think the team would also feel the effects of that. I know the stadium was fired up. There's no one at the stadium now because it was a 4-hour rain delay, and who the hell is going to stick around through that? But I feel like with Sonny Gray starting on Thursday and even Garcia starting on Friday, it should give this team a little bit more energy.
Yeah, I mean, you hope so. You hope it's a shot in the arm. And it might be, it might not be. If one of them comes out and just stinks, or, you know, something doesn't go good for Gray tomorrow, you know, you worry how all these people who are kind of just hopping on the bandwagon, or not even hopping on the bandwagon, but haven't been there the past couple of years at a billion games like guys like me and you have, that you see them jumping off and, like, complaining online, and you're just like, well, like, fuck you. You've been here for, you know, like 3 days.
the fair weather
just
fans.
Wait. It'll figure itself out. So, you know, yeah, the stadium is rocking. Hopefully it keeps rocking, because we both know it's much more fun when the team's good. I can't believe we didn't get a walk-off with Scott not here.
Dude, you and I have watched enough starts by Luis Sessa and Caleb Smith to earn a couple starts by Sonny Gray before people start jumping all over him.
Yeah, like early in the season, like, was like, oh yeah, Sessa, give him a shot, da da da. But it's like, all right, the funny games are over. This is real. Let's bring in guys who can really get the job done. And, you know, Tanaka turning right, pitched well today.
Wasn't looking pretty after that first inning.
Yeah. What? Well, that was, you know, you try to start it off with a triple play to get the excitement going for a day game. It just didn't work out for him.
So I have a theory on Tanaka, and Scott totally disagrees with me, but I think he's still dealing with the injury. And we're watching a pitcher that is partially injured, and sometimes he'll go out there and he'll look great, like he did in his last start when he struck out 14 guys. Other times he'll go out and get shelled. I know he didn't get shelled today, but he's been so up and down. And similar to like what we watch with David Price when Price dominated the Yankees a few weeks ago, and now he's on the DL. So I don't know what's wrong with Tanaka. I've gone through so many different scenarios in my head. I've just landed back on he might be injured.
I mean, I think whether or not it's physical, I think there is a mental thing to it, where like he's not getting on top of the ball enough at times because of that, because, you know, he doesn't want to push it. But I've thought all along, Like, hey, if he could just hold it together. Like, if he had the season this year that he had last year, he'd opt out and he'd get more money. And I have a feeling that he was trying to get to that point too.
Right. He was trying to be too perfect, and he looked like he was going to be after that spring training that he had. The rotation obviously now has six starters that are all major league caliber. Girardi has not said they are going, or he has not said they're not going to six-man rotation. It's kind of ambiguous at this point. I don't think they're going to, because I think that just creates more problems at this point in the season. Moving to a six-man rotation on August 3rd or August 2nd, I think is a little difficult. That seems like something you have to do in spring training to make it work right.
No, you can't go to six, because you didn't go out and trade for Sonny Gray to pitch every 6 days. You went out and traded for him to pitch every 5 days. And, you know, you did that to a certain extent with Garcia too, even though, you know, he's not as you know, good. And it's just time to, like, for everyone to a certain extent to nut up. Like, Tanaka tends to pitch better when he gets an extra day. Like, sorry, dude, we don't have that extra day right now. It's time to go out there and pitch. Like, CeCe, you're the old vet. Even if you're just getting us five innings, occasionally six innings, got to go out there every 5 days and get us that time. And then it comes down to, like, you know, Girardi has to look at it and say, Jordan Montgomery, you've pitched well for us this year, but you're the rookie. You have a hard time getting through the order a second and third time sometimes. We just got to go a different direction. And for right now, like, we're going to try to keep you loose out there in case a guy goes down. But right now, this is about the team. And because Girardi's got to be coaching for his job, because if they don't make a deep run here when they've got, like, this close, it's because he couldn't get them to take that next step. And you've got basically a new team, so why not bring in a new manager to, like, let him kind of own these guys' careers the same way that Torrey came in at about the time that the core four was coming in. Let him have those guys, make them his.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because I think if you had thought about what Girardi got this team to at the All-Star break, everyone was happy, even though they were kind of failing at the end of the first half. But Girardi got them to a spot where they were contending, and no one thought that was going to happen. And I think if you ask people then, his job was clearly safe and they would re-sign him. But now you're saying, and I think I might agree with you, that there's now expectations on this team to win, not necessarily win a World Series, but at least make the playoffs. If that doesn't happen, that looks bad on Girardi.
Also, in the media leading up to the All-Star break and things like that, like, there's been a few times where Girardi and Cashman have given interviews the same day and said opposite things.
That's something I've noticed too.
Yeah, so Girardi said, you know, I can only play with who they give me, you know, kind of, you know, things like that, where clearly they're not 100% aligned. And I think it's because everyone knows, I think, you know, if the behind the music of this season were to come out at any point, I think it's going to be, we're all adults. We all know what we have to do. And I think that's the speech that you give. The last couple years, I've complained a few times saying, I don't think Girardi's inspiring these guys, or I don't think this team is really inspired. It's up to Girardi to give them that, you know, that major league, like, what are we going to do speech. And now it's time to, like, hey, you guys are all up here. This is the big leagues. Let's go out there and do big league shit and pitch like big league pitchers. Montgomery, right now you're in the pen. We might even send you down so that you continue to throw on a schedule. And like everyone else, like, let's go. Step it up. No more blown saves. No more losing. We're 10-20 in one-run games. I'm surprised we didn't score a run just to lose another one-run game today.
That goes back to the whole situational hitting, which is just been atrocious. But this is Cashman's baby now, what he's done with this team over the last year. And if he doesn't think Girardi's the man for the job, I think he's got a lot of say in what Steinbrenner does with the next managerial decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had even said before this season, before like everything's turned out to work and Cashman is just shown that he's amazing when given the opportunity, I wasn't sure that Cashman would even stay as GM regardless, but I didn't think he'd leave the organization. I could see them creating another role for him to go there. But now to a certain extent, like, I like give him Randy Levine's job. Let him run everything. Because, like, then let him put another GM in place who's, like, his guy. I could see that still happening even after this season. Like, him moving to more of a, you know, upstairs puppet master role than actually having to make all the phone calls.
Yeah, I could see something like that happening as well.
What Phil Jackson was supposed to be.
Oh, God. A lot of people just muted the podcast at that right there. But before we get you out of here, I also saw something about the Red Sox today that I thought is just hilarious. Mookie Betts said that the Red Sox are feeling the effects of the loss of David Ortiz and that it's really difficult for them because that's a big loss for them.
Yeah, 40 home runs. Like, I would love 40 more home runs.
What does that say about David Ortiz? Because on the one hand, that's like a huge compliment that he can have that big of an impact on a team and a clubhouse. But at the same time, that looks terrible on the organization, which was still picked to win the division and go too deep in the playoffs, and they're just not performing.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, kind of giving yourself like a backdoor out if things don't work out for you. You know, saying like, oh, yeah. Well, you know, they lost Ortiz. You look at that production, but, you know, not just the production, what he means in the clubhouse and things like that. Like, there's your excuse if you don't win the World Series. But, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, he was, like, the glue of that team, even though he's a huge hypocrite and I hate him. But he was the glue of that team. He inspired them, you know, throughout the years once he, you know, miraculously in his late 20s learned how to be a phenomenal hitter and then hit 500 home runs from there. Totally randomly and clean. He really, you know, he ignited the team with excitement because he was, you know, kind of out of nowhere. And then the last couple seasons, you always knew it was like around the end. So let's rally around him. So I can see that being a huge void, but also at the same time, like, yeah, we almost 40 home runs, like just play better. I mean, and you know, the Red Sox are in a, they're in a Yankee-esque situation. Like, they just released a guy who they're paying a ton of money to. They had Hanley Ramirez, who couldn't really play because he just couldn't really play, but he got a ton of money, but he can hit. So, you know, they've gone out. David Price isn't working, paying him a ton of money. And they traded a ton for Sale, but Sale's not getting the support that he needs. And Pedroia is almost as injured as David Wright all the time. So even though you have a couple highlight places, they're spending to be they should be 10 games up right now.
Oh God,
at the minimum,
with the way the Yankees played in June and July. Absolutely. I just picture, like, I can imagine in 2015 after Jeter retired, had like Mark Teixeira or somebody come out and said, you know, it's just really tough for us to win when we don't have Derek Jeter around in the clubhouse. I mean, on the one hand, that would have been again, a huge compliment to Jeter, but as a fan, I'd be like, shut up and go play. You're expected to win regardless.
Yeah. It's, again, it's a backdoor out, and but, you know, no one's going to come down on them in the Boston media for that, because, like, everyone loves Ortiz.
Oh, yeah. He's a god in that town. Him and Tom Brady.
Yeah.
All right, JJ, well, I appreciate you joining us. And we got Sonny Gray on Thursday night against Cleveland. So that should hopefully rejuvenate the Yankees after this terrible series loss to a crappy Detroit team.
Yeah, and Andrew Miller just went on the DL. You never want to see a guy get injured, especially not a guy you like. But it's good to know you're not going to face him.
Now joining me on the podcast is the Bronx Pinstripe Show intern, Dom Musillo. Dom, what's up?
What's going on, Andrew? Happy to be here. Making my debut.
Yeah, I was going to say, Scott goes and has a baby, and then you get to debut on the podcast. Pretty wild.
Call up to the big leagues. You'd love to see it.
That's right. How's interning for the podcast been going?
Oh, it's going really well. For those of you that follow the BP Show Twitter, you should definitely get on that. I do most of the stats there. You know, doing some Photoshops and then helping you guys produce the podcast, doing the voicemails, which were quite hilarious on the last show. So it's been going well.
Well, you just come right out there and just take all the credit for the Bronx Pinstripe Show Twitter. I see how it's going.
Just the stats. Just the stats, man.
Where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at It's Your Boy Dom. And the cha is not a ya, it's like a cha, so C-H-A. I don't have that many followers, so
that's
if
like,
you guys want to bump me up and shoot me a follow, that'd be much appreciated.
So this seems like something you made a hasty decision on, making this Twitter handle. It's like back in the day when like your IM messenger was like awesome boy 696969 or something like that.
Right, yeah, 42069, whatever. Yeah.
Well, yeah, go follow Dom at It's Your Boy Dom if you want some even more hot takes from the Yankees.
There you go.
So what we're going to do is Dom has found five different stats that are pretty telling of a lot of different areas of what's going on with the Yankees right now. He's going to present them, and we're kind of just going to have a back and forth on what he said. So why don't you lead us off?
Perfect. So first, we have Sonny Gray. Huge acquisition, arguably the biggest pitching acquisition since David Cone. Currently, Gray has the second lowest ERA in the majors since June 25. He's got a 1.37. And Kershaw, who is now injured, actually has a 0.56. So he's been hot, and I think we're all really looking forward to the start tomorrow. So what do you think we can expect from him tomorrow night?
Well, tomorrow night it's going to be that's a tough spot to be in going to the
really
Yankees.
Tough.
I mean, I guess at least it's not at Yankee Stadium. Maybe that takes a little pressure off of him, but he is facing the defending AL champions from last year. So, that's a pretty tough spot for a first start from Sonny Gray in a Yankee uniform.
Definitely a tall order, but if you remember back in 2015, he dealt, and then actually the year before that in 2014, he pitched the final game of the season for the A's, tossed a complete game shutout. And the word on the street with Gray is that he's really a big game pitcher. So hopefully he shows that tomorrow night.
I love that. And it's funny that you mentioned the David Cone thing, because I actually just mentioned that with JJ in the previous section of this podcast. He definitely, Sonny Gray definitely is the biggest pitching acquisition the Yankees have made since 95. And what David Cone did for the Yankees back then was he gave them a boost. He gave them playoff legitimacy because he's been there. He was that big game pitcher. Now, obviously, he had more experience than Sonny Gray has now pitching in big games, but that's something that, other than Sabathia on this staff, really nobody has.
Definitely. I mean, he could be that guy. Obviously, in the 90s, you had Andy Pettit, who's arguably the best lefty postseason pitcher of all time with Cone. So that was pretty unreal. But, I mean, listen, if this guy can step up, be good down the stretch here, and then if we're fortunate enough to make the playoffs and he deals again, I mean, that's awesome. That's what you look for. And it already does look great for Brian Cashman, but I mean, that would really solidify things if he were at the centerpiece of a big run here.
And as for his stats since June 25th, it's showing that he's, first of all, healthy, which I think is one of the biggest concerns with Sonny Gray. He had those few injury problems that Scott and I mentioned on the previous podcast, a couple of arm issues. So the fact that he's pitching so well, it proves that he's healthy, at least for now, which is good. And I mean, 1.37 since June 25th, that's no joke. They're acquiring a hot pitcher right now. So,
yep.
I mean, I don't know if I've been as excited for a start of a new Yankee pitcher since maybe they acquired Sabathia back in 09.
Definitely. 100% agree. And then I don't know if you guys have us on, well, if you're listening to the podcast, you have us on all social media platforms. But the quote that David Ortiz said, you know, he's like a 5'10 guy, skinny, wasn't really expecting much out of him. Ortiz is sizing him up. I'm going to take him deep here. And then, you know, fastball, sinker, slider, curve, whap, whap, whap. You have no idea what this guy's going to throw. He drives me crazy. So that's a big comment coming out of Ortiz.
Yeah, what did he call him? Did he call him the Apple sales guy or something like that?
Yeah, he called him like the Apple sales nerd or something.
Yeah. I hated the quote, because for one split second I hated David Ortiz less, and anytime that happens I get pissed off at myself.
Yeah, that's really bad news considering the torture that he's inflicted upon us.
All right, so good start on this. What's our next stat?
The next one is the runners in scoring position problem, and this has just been so bad. The Yanks leave 3.69 men in scoring position per game, which is good for the fifth worst in baseball. It's been really bad of late. The past three games, not including tonight, they've left 4.33 guys in scoring position. Sunday in that loss to the Rays, which was frustrating, they went 1-for-11. Tuesday, last night, they went 2-for-9. And then, well, we're recording this on Wednesday. But then, yeah, last night, so I guess they went 0-for-9. So in the past two games, they are 2-for-18 with runners in scoring position. That's how you lose a series right there.
That's how you lose a series to a terrible Detroit Tigers team.
Right.
On the one hand, the fact that they get a lot of guys on base. They're one of the better offenses in the league as far as on-base percentage goes. So the more times people are on base, the more opportunities you have to leave them on base and in scoring position. But what really pisses me off is the few situations where they have second and third or a guy on third and less than two outs, and they just cannot find a fly ball within them. It's so frustrating because that game on Sunday and on Tuesday, just a simple fly ball or a ground ball to the infield totally changes the outlooks of both of those games.
Right, and whether it's DD or Judge up in those spots, you know, guys that have come up big, have good numbers with runners in scoring position, just can't get it done. I mean, it's pretty piss-poor timing if you ask me. But really what it boils down to is get them on, get them over, get them in. And if you're not doing that in a stretch run here, then you're going to run into problems and you're going to lose series to teams that are, you know, 15 games under 500 like the Tigers are.
And as much as we love Clint Frazier and what he's done and obviously love Aaron Judge, both of those guys have been striking out a lot. And the more you strike out, the less you put the ball in play, the fewer chances of things going well.
Right.
We're missing guys like Hicks and Castro. Both of those are contact guys. So the depth in the offense just isn't what it was, say, in early June.
Yep. Hopefully Hicks is on his way back. He started tonight over in Scranton. He went 1-for-3.
Okay. And I know Castro is still a long way away. That's what Girardi said. He's not even started running yet. They're waiting for him to be 100% because he came back after the All-Star break and clearly wasn't 100%, re-aggravated it.
Yeah, that's a big problem. I mean, it's not ideal to platoon Wade and Torres at second base.
I'm still confident that the Yankees' offense is still one of their strengths. It's in one of those slumps right now. But you'd figure now with this pitching staff that can bail them out of a few situations.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, you only give up two runs tonight and you get shut out. I mean, Tanaka was really shaky in the first inning. I was like, wow, this guy is really lucky he even got out of that without four on the board. But, you know, they buckled down. And with this bullpen, you know, they really shorten games for you. And I have complete confidence in everybody back there. The addition of Canley and Robertson was obviously huge. And then Betances tonight threw an immaculate inning. So looks like he's back on track after having some walking trouble and control issues.
Yeah, too bad that couldn't fire the Yankees up to do a few things in the eighth and ninth inning.
Yep.
All right, what do we have?
0-for-9, bad, so.
What do we have next?
Judge is now, well, he was below 300. I think he might be back under. He had a hit tonight, but I think he's like borderline 300 now. Since the All-Star break, he's 10-for-65, which is a 154 clip, 4 homers, 9 ribs, no doubles or triples. Guy's on a 21-game strikeout streak. So what I wanted to do was kind of mirror the numbers of the strikeouts because he's already at 137 strikeouts. And in the first half, when he hit 329, he had 109 Ks and 301 at-bats. So 36.2% of the time he was striking out. And now in the second half, in just 63 at-bats, he's got 27 Ks, which is 42.8. So, I mean, it's just really bad. And the slider, he's chasing. And since the All-Star break, he's actually 0-for-14. With 10 Ks in at-bats ending in a slider.
Ooh.
So that's really his kryptonite.
Where'd you pull that stat out of?
So it was Jack Curry, but okay. It's technically mine now because he got it when he was 0-for-13 with 9 Ks. So I just added.
Did you tweet that out from at BP Show, at Yankees Podcast? That's our new stat.
I can do that right now. That's all us. That's original.
Maybe wait till we're done recording. I don't think Curry's going to get on that anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't think he will.
42.8% strikeout rate in the second half for Judge is creeping back up to that clip that he was striking out in the first half, in the second half of last year. It's a problem. It's a problem because he's chasing, right? He used to just sit on those sliders in the dirt. He used to identify the pitch earlier. I don't know whatever the reason is, and I don't think it's the home run derby, but for whatever the reason is, he's not identifying the breaking balls as well as he was.
Absolutely, 100% agree. He's chasing that slider down, and when guys were getting him out in the first half of the year, they were climbing the ladder, and that was the report, because usually on a big, tall guy like that, they like to go down and get the ball, but most guys were having success with the fastball up. Now you're seeing him chasing the slider low, which is what he was doing, like you said, in the second half of 2016. And for me, he's really just not being aggressive in fastball counts. I mean, lately he's watching really hittable pitches go by. And then on top of that, once he's in those 2-2, 1-2 counts, you know, he's very off balance. Like, I almost just want to say, like, sit back, you know, trust your hands. And he's just slumping right now, but he'll run into a homer. He's good for a homer pretty much like every third game,
right?
Like, regardless.
And then every time he hits a home run, I'm like, oh, that's the one that's going to get him back going, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Yep.
So what does Girardi do? Do you think, I know you wrote in here, do you take him out of the three hole? Do you think that happens?
Yeah, I think they have to take him out of the three hole, because my thinking is, if you're going to leave Gary in the four hole, then you can at least protect him. And I think the way Didi's been seeing the ball, he should be all right in the three hole. Like, I think he can definitely handle that.
They better be ready for a shitstorm, because you know the media is going to eat that up. Oh, what? Have you guys lost confidence in Aaron Judge? Now he's out of the three hole. He's been in the three hole for months at this point.
Oh my God, there's going to be like infinity articles about that if they drop him. And then Girardi's going to be like, it's not what you want.
I'm still confident that Judge is going to turn it around, but he's unfortunately not the 330 hitter that we watched in the first half. That's just not who he is.
Right. And I know Scott had said this in the past. I mean, the dude didn't even go into a slump the whole first half. He was just like, that's one of the better first halves you'll ever see. And then to top it off with the home run derby performance, it was almost like it's like too good, you know, like he's got to go into a slump at some point. But I mean, do you think he's like a 310 hitter? Because like, I see him as more of like a 285 guy, honestly.
Yeah, I don't see a 300 hitter in him, just because of the amount of strikeouts over a long stretch. He just doesn't put the ball in play enough to be over a 300 hitter. He wasn't, like you said, he was putting the ball in play, but none of his hits were really cheap in the first half. He was hitting laser beams all over the park. So,
right, yeah.
Yep. When he puts the ball in play, it's usually a good thing, but I just don't think he makes enough contact to be over a 300 hitter. And I don't really give a crap if he's a 300 hitter, because he's still going to be a power guy. But right now, he's a 150 hitter since the All-Star break, so can't have that.
Yeah, no, definitely can't have that. So the next one I wanted to get to was Matt Holliday. He couldn't hit water if he fell off of a boat right now. He just is not seeing the ball well. I don't know what is going on. Since the voodoo disease, as Scott likes to call it, he is 9-for-73, which is good for a 123 batting average with one double, one homer, and 22 Ks.
It was a big home run, though.
I'm sorry. He's got two doubles. Yes, he's only had two extra base hits since that game-tying homer back on, I think it was July 14th or 15th.
Right, it was against the Red Sox.
Yep.
Holliday looks his age at this point, and I don't know if he's still feeling effects of that illness or what's going on, but he does not look like the same player pre-illness. But what do they do at this point? You can't do, your alternative options are DHing a guy like Jacoby Ellsbury, and that's a joke.
Yeah, that would be a joke, but I mean, it's a viable option. I guess at this point, I mean, how much longer do you let this ride out?
Holliday seems like a guy that has very quickly earned Girardi's trust.
Yeah, I mean, Girardi says, you know, he's too good for the way he's playing, and I completely agree, but I mean, whatever illness he had, he is just not the same hitter at all.
But Holliday's getting a lot of the criticism, but there's a lot of guys who are slumping right now. So, and it's Judge, it's Holliday. The lack of that production in the middle of the batting order is really a problem. And it sucks, because you're getting production out of guys like Chase Headley, which we're not used to.
Yeah. On Tuesday, I think Judge was hitting third, DD was hitting fourth. No, maybe Holliday was hitting fourth, but I think DD was hitting fifth. The 3, 4, 5 hitters were like a combined 0-for-13 on the night. Like, that can't happen. That just can't happen.
DD's been one of their better hitters, though.
No, I absolutely. I mean, but everybody's, you know, bound to go at least an over once or twice, you know. So, but he's been getting it done.
All right, let's get to this last stat here.
Yeah, Guardy, who is, I guess, the unwritten captain, the unofficial leader of the team here. He's riding a career best 14 game hit streak, which is the longest active streak in the majors.
So first question, can he reach 56?
It's going to be tough. No, he can't.
No, I think no we need shot. To make, we made a captain of New York t-shirt for Derek Jeter a few years ago. I think we just need to make a, in quotes, the captain for Brett Gardner.
Yes. Air quotes, the captain. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, sorry, I interrupted you. Where were you going with that?
So it's actually interesting because his career first and second half splits show a drastic drop off. Like in the second half, he's just half the player that he was in the first half. And I think it could be attributed to maybe his size. And I think he just wears down as the season goes along, but you're not seeing it now. I mean, he's having a great second half. I mean, to be on a 14 game hit streak, I think he's hitting something like 320 with four homers over that span. He's got to keep up this play down the stretch, and he's been a good table setter, rocking a stash. Got to love what you're seeing out of Gardner right now.
I do love what I'm seeing out of Gardner right now. I want him in center field, Clint Frazier in left field, and Aaron Judge in right field until Aaron Hicks comes back. I want no part of Jacoby Ellsbury. We saw him boot a ball on Wednesday afternoon. It was just atrocious. Gardner has become their spark plug. And it's clear that's what he is. He almost willed them to another victory Tuesday night, right? Wasn't he on base as the winning run in the ninth inning? Frazier just popped out. But Gardner's one of these streaky players that I remember he hit, 11 home runs in May of this year. And then he went into a slump. He's hot again. He's probably going to slump again. Just got to ride this hot streak while he's going.
Yeah, like you got to hope this lasts. But I mean, to be on a 14-game hit streak, and he's only a 262 hitter, I want to say, right now. I mean, like, that kind of speaks volumes to how bad he was slumping before that,
that you
know,
speaks,
and how streaky he is.
That also speaks to a lot of one-for-fours.
Right, yeah, literally.
All right, Dom. Well, nice job. I think you've earned a second shot on the Bronx Pinstripe Show somewhere in the future.
That's great news. I'm glad I could fill in, and congratulations to Scott.
Yes, hopefully... he's back for the next episode. I'm sure he will be. If you guys want to submit mailbag questions for that episode, we do mailbags on Monday. So go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. Call the voicemail line. Dom was talking about it at the beginning of the show. They were awesome with the Sonny Gray ones. We want more of them. 646-480-0342. And you can follow all of us on Twitter. My handle is at Andrew_Rotondi. Dom's is at It's Your Boy Dom. And obviously, Scott's is at Scott Reinen. And follow the show at Yankees Podcast. Dom, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.